some benefit. Wisdom offers a wise man the ability to make some good choices and decisions in life. And as we get into chapter 8 and we see some more comments about leadership, the point can be made here too. You know, that if there's a wise man in the city, well, he can be a leader there. You know, he can accomplish more than 10 rulers in a city who are not very wise. His point over and over again as we go through here is the benefits of wisdom. You know, that we need to look for such. We need to be wise in the way we think. We were down in the latter part of the chapter here, verse 23 and following. Let's read these verses again. All this I tested by wisdom, and I said, I am determined to be wise, but this was beyond me. Whatever wisdom may be, it is far off and most profound. Who can discover it? So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate and to search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. I find more bitter than death a woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Look, says the teacher, this is what I've discovered, adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things. While I was still searching but not finding, I found one upright man among 1,000, but not one upright woman among them all. This only have I found. God made man upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes. It's like everything else, it seems, that we've read from Solomon. There's some points there I think I understand. There's some I don't know that I do. But again, the overall theme being the benefit and the power of wisdom, and that we need to be wise. Even Solomon did not know it all. You know, I was determined to be wise, he said, but it was beyond me. And yet here is the man that God gave incredible wisdom, because he asked and he prayed for such. And God blessed him with wisdom beyond that of most men, and where kings from other nations would come and just to listen to what he had to say, to try to get something from his wisdom. And yet here's what the wise man is saying. You know, I tried to be wise. I was determined to be wise. But it was beyond me. I just couldn't find answers for everything. And as we've seen in the earlier chapters, he sure tried. He had tried it all. He tried to find wisdom. He tried to understand it all. And here we are, as we've come to this point in Ecclesiastes, where there seems to be kind of a change taking place in the way Solomon is thinking and some conclusions he's drawing. You know, this is perhaps one of the finest conclusions that he could make from the wise man. I don't get it all. I just don't understand it all. And sometimes we need to know that too. We've all dealt with someone, haven't we? We've all dealt with someone, you already know where I'm going, who has an answer for everything. You know, doesn't that get under your skin? Because no one has an answer for everything. And I don't know anybody who could have been as wise as Solomon was. And even Solomon says, I just can't figure it all out. Though he had every resource available, God had blessed him in every way to be able to have knowledge and wisdom. And yet when it came to figuring everything out, he couldn't. And part of his conclusion we have seen already is that God has it figured out, and we cannot match our wisdom with God's. And that's part of what we've seen in the conclusions that are being made. And that's what he's saying here again, really, and that's kind of the point. Whatever wisdom may be, it's almost like he's saying, what is wisdom? How do you know it? Whatever wisdom may be, it is far off and most profound. Who can discover it? I turned my mind to understand, to investigate and to search out wisdom in the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. He said all that before in different ways. And yet here he is kind of just wrapping some things up and some conclusions being drawn. And then he draws this conclusion. This is where we were. We talked about this some Wednesday night. We need to give a little more time to this. And this is part of it that I understand some of it, but not all of it. I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner he will ensnare. Why do you think he'd be saying that? A thousand times over. Very literally. You know, I don't know. Just as we've seen it some other times as we've gone through, is he making some absolute personal application here? Well, maybe. You know, I mean, some of it certainly seems to be like this. But this next point, look, says the teacher, this is what I've discovered. It's like he's saying, listen to me. Just for once. My dad used to say, for once, just listen to me. You know, and again, he said that a lot. You know, I'm trying to help you understand. You know, I wasn't necessarily the easiest child to bring up. You know, just listen to me, Solomon is saying. You know, this is what I've discovered. Adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things, while I was still searching but not finding. Look, he said, I've tried it all. I've done this, and then I did this, and I did this, and I'm just trying to figure it out. I'm trying to get the scheme of things. But I didn't find it all. But I found one thing. I found one upright man among a thousand. You know, that's kind of a bleak view to me. I mean, when we're trying to find those who are upright, maybe he's not so far off on that. I found one upright man among a thousand. It's hard to find a righteous man. I mean, really. I mean, we all know some people that are good people, you know, and we have acquaintances and friends that's good people. And we're talking about here one who is righteous, you know, one who is truly godly. It can be hard to come by. You know, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all. Really? That's pretty bleak. Why in the world would Solomon say something like that? You know, really? He had a thousand women to look at and to make some judgment from. Yeah. Yeah. He did exactly what God said not to do. I mean, he'd always told his people, the children of Israel, not to marry foreign wives, and you know, don't let your daughters marry, don't let your sons marry. But that's exactly what they had done to a great degree at this point, you know. And now Solomon. Now, you would think this man of great wisdom, this man whom God has imparted incredible knowledge and wisdom, what was he thinking? I mean, what happened? I mean, this really, you know, is his downfall. You know, and really not just his. It has a tremendous effect on the people, on the kingdom. What are some applications we've got to bring and make out of this? That's right. Sure. Yeah. That's right. Let's see. Number 722. You come. Yeah. How special can you feel? Yeah. That's horrible. What else? Applications we need to think about here. Ouch. Oh. Good point. I mean, how right. That's right. What else can you think? I mean, I look, this is a powerful passage here. So there's so many things we need to try to learn, you know, from this. Relationships and what they can be and what they cannot be. The foolishness of the foreign wives, you know, he looks at these wives and can find not an upright one among them. Well, yeah. I mean, where did he go to get the wives? He went among the ungodly. You know, have you ever known someone, maybe even who has gone through multiple marriages, you know, kind of goes from, or at least relationships, goes from one to another, and they're kind of bemoaning the fact, you know, I mean, I've talked with guys, and it's like, man, I can't find a good woman anywhere. There's not a good woman out there. It's like, where are you looking? You know, and like they're bar hopping from one place to another, and they're not finding, you know, good women. Hello. And consequently, the women are not finding good guys either. All right. Surely there's some lessons we can learn from this. Maybe lessons even we would tell our children and grandchildren about some of this. Part of his conclusion here, verse 29. This only have I found. God made mankind upright. But men have gone in search of many schemes. All right. What are some conclusions with that? Is he talking about himself again right here? You know, and I got to hand it to him from this standpoint. He's not blaming God. I mean, have you ever heard people blame God for their problems and their woes? And when you really kind of stand back and look at it, it's like foolish decision after foolish decision that they made has put themselves in a horrible situation. It was their own fault. We've seen that. Solomon's kind of in a difficult situation now as he looks at these thousands of wives. He's not happy with not any of them. You know, there's not one righteous among them. He's not blaming God. He can't blame God for that. There you go. Right. That's right. It's not the first time for him to say it now. He's talked about this theme before. Chapter 3, verse 11. Let's see. God has made everything beautiful in his time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. You know, we talked about that. Remember, God has made us in such a way that we have an understanding of right and wrong. There's something within us that leads us to look to God if we would just choose to do so. And I think that's kind of the same point here, Les, that he's kind of driving that again. God made man upright, you know, the text says, but men have gone in search of many schemes. That's right. That's right. How could that be? Ken, I mean, that's why I still just can't understand Solomon. This man of just great wisdom and leadership ability, this king over this great kingdom of the people of God, has to some great degree lost sight of God. If this was written at the end of Solomon's life, which we've talked about that some, perhaps that was the case. Maybe it's in retrospect here. He has seen mistakes that he has made. He's seeing that he has moved farther away from God. And his end conclusion is going to be the importance of being near to God and following him in all things. But it sure took him a long time to figure it out. You know, he went the roundabout way, you know, to get there. Some of us don't have that chance. We're not all granted that time to do that. And part of what he's saying here, too, this point it seems to me this has to be made, is that he's given man a choice. God has made man upright. But as he would say, but men have gone in search of many schemes. Men have made the choice. God has made us in such a way that we would know him. Or as the Apostle Paul would say in Acts chapter 17, God has made us in such a way that we might grope for him. Though he's not far from each one of us. If we will choose to reach for him, he's there. Solomon understood that. But he kind of lost his way for a while. Other thoughts? Odds, yeah, good point. Can think and can choose and make choices that way. Can make choices really based on moral and spiritual principles. God has made man that way. That's right. Good. It's not under the sun. Yeah, going back to the phrase he's used previously so many times. And like we said, it seems like here, at the end of chapter 7, there's been a little shift. Now he's looking at things above the sun. That's where we need to be. You know, as the apostle would say in Colossians chapter 3, you know, we are the ones who are looking to heaven where God is. We have to be the ones looking above the sun. Colossians chapter 3. He didn't say above the sun. That was Solomon's term. But it's the same principle. You know, the same idea. Chapter 8, we're still kind of a little bit on the same theme right here. Chapter 8, verse 1. Who is the wise man, he says? Who knows the explanation of things? Wisdom brightens a man's face and changes its hard appearance. I think really some of that is conclusions, you know, to some of the other points that he was just making. And then he's going to kind of move into somewhat of a little bit different theme here. You know, everywhere that Solomon looked under the sun, there were some things that just didn't make sense to him. We've made the comments before. It's like Solomon was saying about some aspects of life, this ain't fair. There's just some things, I mean, we've all been there, this is not fair. Well, life is not always fair. Wisdom helps us to deal with life. Wisdom helps us to kind of work our way through. And as he says here, you know, who is like the wise man? I'm not sure, again, if that's a reference to himself. It almost seems like it could be. Not that he has all the answers. He just said he didn't. I mean, he just acknowledged he doesn't have all the answers. And yet he could not help but to be able to understand and acknowledge that God has given him great wisdom. He has said that. Who is like the wise man? Who knows the explanation of things? Who brightens a man's, well, wisdom brightens a man's face and changes its hard appearance. He's just been talking in this whole context about the benefits of wisdom if it's properly used. And he's just acknowledged to us that he hasn't always used wisdom right. That he's looked sometimes to the wrong place to try to sort some things out. But again, wisdom is something that helped him pull things back together. What are some other applications we can make with wisdom? You know, in this passage right here. Who knows like the wise man? Sam? Jesus certainly did. And of course, you know, you think about that. Now, here's man talking and realizing, well, I really couldn't figure it all out. Jesus comes from a different plane. He's the Son of God. He demonstrated great wisdom that we can learn from. We learn from some of Solomon's mistakes is what we learn from. Who is like the wise man? Who knows the explanation? What are some thoughts? What are some comments that can be made? When we look in the first few verses of chapter 8, there's some things that seem to lend itself to the idea of leadership. And again, part of the theme going through there is wisdom and the need of wisdom in leadership. There's some applications we can make there. I know, Rick, what have you got to say?
Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't help but imagine that Solomon took some pleasure, and I don't think this in a bad way, but I think he took some pleasure at having kings and leaders from other countries come to him for him to impart wisdom to them. When we read to the documentary part of the text, you know, about the life of Solomon, we see that that was something that happened time and again. God gave him that wisdom. And really it was a reflection not just on Solomon, but those who were around could know and understand that Jehovah God was with Solomon. I mean, this was the children of Israel. It was a time of great blessings among the people because they were following God. And at that time, at least from what we can see from the text, so was Solomon. And so it was a reflection on God even, you know, his great wisdom. And you can only imagine that Solomon could take some pleasure, you know, in being able to impart that wisdom. Some have said wisdom is a key component of leadership. And I think there's some truth to that. I mean, we've not seen too many who are elevated to a place of leadership without wisdom. It happens sometimes. And we usually see the crash and burn that takes place, you know, when that happens. And so, for leadership, yeah, wisdom is of great value. We can understand that. Who knows the explanation of things? I mean, again, for a king or being in some role of leadership, being able to explain things, which if you're going to explain things of itself of necessity means that there are those who come to you to ask. Or there's nothing to explain. If no one is asking, you have no reason to explain. We can make some applications with leadership there. I mean, in many forms. I mean, in the secular world, in the business world, you know, those who are leaders are those who have some wisdom generally and have the ability to answer questions that are being asked. Which you can even turn that around in some different ways and make some applications. Generally, one does not get to that level or being in that position if they have no ability to relate to those who are asking. I mean, we've probably all seen some who might have a lot of knowledge but have no ability to communicate that to someone else. And there's a limit to how far they can go because of that. And again, we can make applications in secular, in the workplace, in the community. We can make applications in the church with that. I mean, when we look for leadership in the church, when we look for elders in the church, we're looking for wisdom. Yeah, I mean, God says so. We're looking for men who have ability to understand the text and God's will and to be able to explain that to others. That's part of it too. We can see the wisdom in what Solomon is saying right here. Wisdom brightens a man's face and changes its hard appearance. And somehow I can just envision with Solomon sitting on that throne when the Queen of Sheba came and is asking questions, he's able to give explanations. There had to be a smile on his face. And when he dealt with other difficult issues that were presented to him and he had an answer, you know, that's enough to make you smile. Just some interesting thoughts to me when you kind of work those through your mind. Other thoughts with Benny? Sort some of that out. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 I'm understanding a little bit about life. Yeah. Yeah, I wish that could happen like when I was 20. you know, life could have been a lot easier for me if I could have been a lot wiser. And has practiced. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good point. That's right. What else? Look a bit farther here in chapter 8, verse 2. Obey the king's command. I say, because you took an oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence, and do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since a king's word is supreme, who can say to him, "What are you doing?" Whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. For there is proper time and procedure for every matter, though a man's misery weighs heavily upon him. There's some points that are just practical points, practical application, you know, type thing. Obey the king's command. There's some sound reasons why we should do that. For one reason, God said so. And sometimes we don't always want to obey the king. You know, Romans chapter 13 puts some things in perspective for us. God has placed governments in place and position. Sometimes we don't always understand, but sometimes it's not always ours to understand. But we have to understand that our place and position is obeying the king. And kind of interesting here, Solomon's perspective on this. Obey the king's command because you took an oath before God. I think it's the idea because God said so. You know, you need to obey the king. Think of some other applications, some points here that need to be made. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. What are some applications that we might think about with that? Yeah. Well, if you have no audience with the king, so to speak, he can just do whatever he wants. He can do whatever he wants anyway. But he may be less likely to be unkind to you if you're there and your presence is there. It's kind of the idea I was thinking, you know, with that. Do not stand up for a bad cause. I need some basic principles here. You need to think about what you're standing for. You know, in our presence before the king and out of his sight as well. You know, don't stand up for a bad cause. And this almost seems to be in his presence is the idea. Because he just said, don't be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. You know, don't stand up for a bad cause, for he'll do whatever he pleases. Maybe even the idea is that if you stay in the king's presence, he'll be less likely to do something that he shouldn't do because you're there. Do not leave his presence. You know, and do not stand for a bad cause. I mean, that would require that you have to say, but King, have you considered? You know, you're taking a stand. Very. Oh, yeah, good thoughts. That's right. Standing up against the king, you know. And their attitude in doing so. Make some similar comments with Daniel. But notice his attitude and how he made his stand. Yeah. It could in part be the idea here of watching your tongue and watch what you say before the king, where you may have some effect or not. I mean, how you say it. We've all had those conversations with someone. It's not what you said, it's how you said it. That is the problem, you know. And certainly if you were standing before the king, wouldn't you be a little bit careful about how you said some things, especially if you were not agreeing with something the king said? You know, we would be maybe a little more careful about that. Whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. It's kind of an interesting thought here to me. The idea about having a wise heart that discerns, you know, time and judgment. As this text says, a wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. What's the idea? What's he saying? A wise heart will know the right time and procedure. Yeah, sometimes you got to choose your battle, don't you? You know, I mean, this might not be the right time to bring that up. You know, not saying it's the wrong thing, but not right now. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. His reputation is less than stellar right here, you know, at this point. We can probably all make some application to this idea of, you know, discernment and, you know, the right time. For there is a proper time and procedure for every matter. Though a man's misery weighs heavily upon him, sometimes when there can be a matter that's on our mind that we think, it's just weighing on us, and it's like, we've got to resolve this, it's got to be done right now. Maybe right now is just not exactly the right time. It may be consuming 100% of your emotions right now, but the one that you need to talk to about it, it's like not even on the scale. You know, it's just not the right time. And from the king's perspective, one who has heard from so many who has come before his throne, I can only imagine there was many issues that came before him that he wasn't going to deal with right now because, you know, that's not even an issue for me right now. Next. You know, where at another time, that may have got a little more consideration. Having to sort that through. And so whether you're a king or whether you're one going to talk to a king, time and procedure, you know, makes a difference there. Verse 7. Since no man knows the future, who can tell him what is to come? No man has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the day of his death. As no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. All this I saw as I applied my mind to everything done under the sun. There is a time when a man lords over others to his own hurt. All right. What is the point here? What's the applications that can be made? What has Solomon learned? No man knows the future. Who can tell him what is to come? The wisest man to walk the earth, perhaps, in this time says, well, no one knows the future. I can't tell you the future. No one knows the future. No man has power over the wind to contain it. Some text might say, no man has power over his spirit to contain it. It's kind of an interesting thought. The word spirit there, wind is probably the best translation for this. Spirit could be understood from the standpoint of our spirit is going to be given up. We're going to die at some point. and we don't have a control over that, we're all going to die. But it's sort of like this idea of, as he has said a number of times, to do this or to do that's like grasping for the wind. You can't really get a hold of the wind. And there's some things about your spirit. I mean, there's going to come a point in time where you know, we're going to die. So no one has power over the day of his death. You know, we don't control that. You know, we're going to die. Often we don't know when. I mean, sometimes we might get sick and we know that we're going to die. But we don't know exactly when we're going to die. It's like trying to contain the wind, trying to get a hold of that. We really can't. We can't. That's not ours to get a hold of. God controls that. Lots of applications probably we could make with that. No one is discharged in a time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. Another very practical point. I mean, just like when, as that king would understand, when a nation goes to war, you know, when they're in war, you know, his soldiers, he's not going to say, well, you've done a really good job, you've done enough, you can go home now. Well, not until the war is over. He's not going to be released in a time of war. Like his analogy then, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. You ever talk with someone who seems to just be struggling so much with issues of life and sin? And it's like they just can't seem to stop. Sin is a problem in their life. What am I going to do with this sin? Well, stop sinning. I mean, you're going to have to choose to stop doing things that cause you to sin. Because as long as you practice sin, Satan's got a hold of you and will not let go. Just like the king will not let go of a soldier in time of war. I mean, that's just practical application. You know, I mean, even in this country, if we're in a time of just heavy war and your enlistment time comes up, guess what? You may not be going home. And if you practice sin, sin will not let go of you. And that was his point with that. All right, time is gone. Make a mark right here. Lord willing, Wednesday night, we're going to take up here around verse 10 and kind of move on from there. Appreciate your comments this morning. Thank you for coming. And those who can, let's move up closer to the front. Let's come on up here.